This is Casey Currents. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. Susan Wilson is out this week. Murder Mystery Fans, a new series of police crime novels, launches next week, starring the tough but sensitive Skeet Banyan. She's a former KCPD homicide detective who wanted to get away by becoming the police chief on a small-town college campus. Skeet is the creation of local author Linda Rodriguez, who won a national competition with this first novel. It's now being published by St. Martin's Press and has already been recommended as a must-read for this month by Barnes & Noble's mystery editor. Rodriguez officially launches the book at the Kansas City Public Library on April 24th, but she joins us now in studio to talk about Every Last Secret, which merges the mystery genre with some witty observations about life in a college town. Thanks for coming in, Linda.
Well, thank you for having me, Sylvia.
It's nice to have you back.
It's lovely to be back.
With a new book.
Yes.
And so I was hoping we'd just start out with a reading so people could get a little bit of a taste of your new mystery. Do you need to set up the section that you're going to read?
There has been a murder, and the murder weapon is missing. They know it's something large and chunky. And Skeet Banyan is the protagonist, who is the chief of police of a small-town campus police force. And she is going out and trying to, you know, question suspects. And a friend of hers, kind of kooky friend, has said that she knows something about this. So she's gone to talk to her friend, who formerly was a well-known model in Kansas City, who went to California, failed, and had an enlightening, and came back as a New Age bookstore owner and guru. I hung up and headed for the town square and Mother Earth Books with a lighter heart. Maybe this murderer would turn out to be an outsider after all, someone from the underbelly of Kansas City. Maybe the chancellor would get his wish. As I parked in the town square, the final wisps of cloud sailed east and the full sun burst forth. The day was looking up. I entered the bookstore accompanied by the jingle of a bell. The air smelled of sweet herbal incense. A bulky wooden counter with a cash register, vacant except for a massive long-haired cat with gray and white stripes, stood in the middle of the store. I walked over and petted the cat. "Hey, Kernunos, where's your mom?" He stretched his neck to put his head more fully within my caress. "She's supposed to be meeting me, not to mention that anyone could rip off the whole store right now." The cat was content to stay as we were forever. I, however, had moved into that state of restless energy that fed my investigations and kept me constantly on the move, trying to add to the pool of information until I could build the case. I gave Kernunos one last pat, then headed for the back of the store. Mother Earth Books was painted in warm, vibrant reds and golds to contrast with dark walnut shelves and counters. High walls above the shelving held richly colored ethnic wall hangings and rugs. Miriam's contribution to the decor lay in the large crystals, amethyst, malachite, rose quartz, I couldn't remember all the names, that sat on various tables and shelves. When I'd first gone to the store, I'd told Miriam she was asking for theft by leaving the semi-precious gems lying around so freely. She'd replied confidently that her crystals would never allow themselves to be stolen. I thought she was nuts, but none of the stones ever turned up missing. I didn't really like to think about it. I called out softly for Miriam, not wanting to disturb the readers. Just before I reached the back wall, a door opened and Miriam stepped out with an armload of books. "Is it that late? Have you been waiting very long?" "Not very, but people could have been stealing from you. You shouldn't leave things unsupervised." Miriam laughed her musical, practiced laugh. "No one could steal from us. I've put strong mystical protections all around the store. We're absolutely safe." I rolled my eyes. "I think an alarm system and an alert staff would be more secure." "You are so tied to this material plane. When are you going to learn to let loose of that tight hold on physicality and let your spirit fly free?" Miriam set the books on the counter and picked up the cat. "Be like Kernunos, absorbed in the sheer joy of being. He's a very metaphysical cat, aren't you, boy?" I laughed. "He looks pretty absorbed in physicality to me. He must weigh 25 pounds. You need to put him on a diet." She set him on the counter. He spends most of his day meditating. He's really quite spiritual. Cats are very evolved beings, of course, but Cernunnos is especially highly developed. It's his appetite that's highly developed. I smooth down the long hair on the cat's back. Isn't that right, you pretty pig? I think he eats so much in order to keep himself grounded while his soul is flying. Miriam was quite serious. You're so tied to the physical realm that you can't see it. I shook my head again. It's that physical realm I've come to see you about.
And it's all part of the investigation of a murder that happened on campus. And let's set up the plot of Every Last Secret a little bit more. It's about Skeet Banyan, a KCPD homicide detective who leaves the force to become chief of campus police in a college town just outside of Kansas City for change of pace. And a month after she six months after she arrives, there's a murder on campus.
It's the chief editor-in-chief of the campus newspaper who has been killed. And as Skeet begins the investigation, she finds that he has had his fingers in all kinds of dirty little pies. And those threads lead into the town, into the city, and into the highest levels of the campus administration. The chancellor, of course, just wants her to sweep everything under the rug because they're in the middle of a capital campaign. And Skeet refuses to do this. She can't, actually. There's a federal law that says you can't, and she throws that back in his face.
And you mentioned that the murder victim had his hands in all sorts of dirty little pies,
yes,
which perhaps people wouldn't expect would exist on a college campus in a small, pristine college town.
I recently did a guest blog on one of the big mystery group blogs called Jungle Red Riders. And I wrote about that, and this was right after the Sandusky stuff had come out. And I wrote a guest blog about campus crime, and people were just amazed at the kinds of crimes that go on campus and have been going on for a long time. But, you know, they're often larger than many small towns, and they have this population that's mostly in the age group when people are going to act out, when they're going to do risky things they haven't done before, and when they haven't quite developed their full sense of good judgment.
Interesting, because the book isn't obviously about that issue, but it makes me wonder, how much were you thinking about that when you decided to set the mystery on a college campus?
Well, I wanted to set it on a college campus because I know college campuses. In my previous career, I was on a college campus as an administrator for a long time. And also because I wanted to use a female campus police chief. I didn't want to do an urban police procedural just in the building with the police force, but I wanted a heroine who had a reason to investigate crimes. She wasn't just nosy, who also was capable in terms of physical combat, in terms of using a weapon and carrying a weapon, and would have a reason for that. And I knew about campus police forces, so that all worked together. I made up a little town and a little college to put it in right outside of Kansas City, because since I had worked in a Kansas City university for many years, I did not want people thinking, oh, did that crime really happen at that university?
And people here in Kansas City might be wondering, it's supposed to be 12 miles outside of Kansas City, trying to figure out which campus it is and which little college town.
It's actually, I made this town up. It sits in location about where Riverside is. It's based a lot on Parkville, Lawrence, and Liberty. The college physically is based a lot on Park College because it's got this beautiful scenic campus. And in actuality, in the way the college is run and the people going on, it's based on a lot of universities all around the Kansas City area.
And the book, of course, jumps full on into this world of academic personalities and politics. And Skeet Banyan observes pretty early on that academia has a stricter hierarchy than the police.
Well, the police is a paramilitary organization, and so they have this very strong hierarchy. But in academia, and when I said that, Skeet's talking about the wife of a dean of the business school, and the dean divorced her and married one of his students. And the wife, to support her children, took a job as a high-level administrative person, the executive assistant to another dean. But that classed her as non-faculty or faculty wife. That put her over in the staff side. A lot of faculty regard those jobs as just clerical, no matter how high level they are. So she dropped immediately out of all of her friends on the faculty and their wives. She dropped immediately out of their social viewpoint.
Now, how did the idea of writing a mystery come up? This is your first.
I've been a poet for years, but I always wanted to write a novel. I set up this town and this character. I wanted to write a book about her. And because of the kind of character she was, a mystery seemed to be natural.
Was she a police officer from the beginning?
Yes, yes. She was. I had known a woman who bears no resemblance to anyone in this book. I had known a woman who had once been the highest ranking female police officer in the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department. She's since retired. And I thought if you took that kind of a woman and had her leave that kind of promising career, what could cause that? And immediately I came up with Skeet Banyan's ex-cop father who had to retire in disgrace because he was a drunk and because they were claiming that he was dishonest, and her still a cop ex-husband who's charming and manipulative and possessive and does not want to let Skeet go, even though they've been divorced for several years. And I thought she will go to flee them and to flee the reputation that her father has developed.
And Skeet Banyan's half-Cherokee background influences her in her police work and in her life.
This is the first in a series of books about Skeet. And through the course of this series, Skeet is going to come more and more to accept her Cherokee heritage. At the beginning in this first book, her grandmother, who helped to raise her, has had a huge influence on her. And Skeet is always thinking of what Gran would say and what Gran would do. It's not like she denies it, but she doesn't see herself as living as Cherokee. And as we move through the series, we're going to see more and more. Skeet's a very kind of closed person at the beginning of this book, and the book is going to crack her open. And each story after this is going to crack her a little further open and let more people into her life.
What surprised you about this world that Skeet Banyan inhabits, either in your research or in your own writing, when you sort of discovered the characters and the stories as you were writing?
That's the fun part of writing a novel, I think, is that the characters grow on you in ways you never imagined, and the world just opens out for you. When I started the book, I knew what the initial crime would be, and I didn't really know yet who had done it. And I knew something would have to happen in the course of this investigation to really crack Skeet open somehow. And I didn't know exactly what it was going to be. And then along came this young teenage boy who walks Skeet's dog, who winds up, through no fault of his own, caught up in all kinds of tragedy and violence. And I wasn't expecting that. And when I went with that, it just went to wonderful places that I hadn't meant to go. There are people who outline murder mysteries, and there are people who write it the way I did, with an idea of what the murder is and not really knowing who yet among all these possibles did it. And we call ourselves the plotters and pantsers, which is fly by the seat of your pants. And
which are you?
I'm more of a pantser. Though since I'm going to have to be doing at least one book a year now, I'm going to have to start doing some kind of plotting, because I've done the second one and turned it in, and I need to start on the third one. And I think, well, I need to know a little bit more ahead of time.
I wonder, just more broadly, as someone who's been an advocate of women writers for a long time, what do you think about the role of women in this police mystery genre? I think there's quite a few that have been really successful. Is that right?
Well, yeah. I'm a member of an organization called Sisters in Crime, which actually was founded in this area. Its home base is Lawrence, Kansas, and the great writer Sarah Paretsky and Nancy Picard and a couple of others were the founders. And, of course, Nancy lives in Kansas City, and Sarah Paretsky was originally from Lawrence. And Sisters in Crime was founded, gosh, it's 25 or 30 years ago now, to address the fact that women crime writers were not getting the reviews, they were not being published anywhere near proportion to their numbers, and the awards. And the idea was, and they still monitor reviews and things like that, and those things have changed for the better tremendously, and it's opened a lot of doors for women in crime fiction. Some of the most successful and big bestsellers in crime fiction right now are women. But I think it's a natural for women because, number one, the readership of mysteries and thrillers is overwhelmingly female. Mm-hmm. People don't realize that, but it's mostly women buying those books. Also because crime fiction, at its essence, is always about cleaning up messes, restoring order when it's been broken and thrown into chaos, making things right again. And this is something women know a lot about.
There's going to be a whole series of Skeet Banyan books. How many are there?
I would envision it, if all goes well, going, you know, six or seven books at least until I get tired of Skeet. I have another series I'd actually like to write that my agent and editor are interested in that would be set directly in Kansas City in the West Side Latino community. So we'll see how things play out with Skeet first. I have to build an audience before I launch another series.
Great. Well, Linda Rodriguez is the author of Every Last Secret, the first in a series of mystery novels. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Sylvia.
Linda Rodriguez will be discussing her new mystery novel, Every Last Secret, on Tuesday, April 24th at the Central Branch of the Kansas City Public Library. If you can't listen to all of Casey Kearns today, catch what you missed online in our audio archives. And we've got a podcast. Find us on iTunes.